Hello, here I am again, Ray, with another podcast episode. I've got a cold, so sorry about that. I've waited a few days. I've got a newspaper here as well. In fact, I've got a pile of newspapers. I've waited a few days to try and get my cold a bit better before doing this episode. Right, I have here, before I look at the newspaper, I have here a scrapbook lent to me by a friend of mine. I'm just looking through it now. He got this from a car boot sale. It's like a sort of, you know, junk sale. You probably have them in America and wherever. I don't know what you call them, a trunk sale, would it be? Anyway, he bought this scrapbook for a pound, and it's from, obviously, from the 50s, 60s. Someone's cut out newspaper articles, and I'm just looking through it now, and there's a personal column here. What they were trying to sort of collect, it's not all about music or it's not all about cars, it's a mixture of things. So I don't know what it is about this scrapbook that's of interest. It's just such a mixture of things. But what I have noticed is this personal column. Now it says here, D, same time, same place, I have the cash. And it's signed P. Now what's all that about? Same place, same time, I have the cash. A friend of mine that I worked with many years ago, he used to get the weekly paper. He'd rush over from where we worked, he'd go over to the newsagent, get the local paper, and he'd go through the personal column. He was obsessed. And he said, oh, this is spies. It's all to do with spies, double agents and all that, secret codes. And I suppose reading this one, I've got the cash. I suppose, well, possibly someone's selling for some information. I don't know. It sounds a bit silly to me. But it was either spies or the Eternal Triangle. Do you remember the Eternal Triangle? I don't think that term is used anymore, is it? That's where you get, say, I don't know, a married couple or, you know, a couple of people, and there's a third person involved. Perhaps the man's having an affair with some other woman, or the woman's having an affair with some other man, or whatever. It's the Eternal Triangle. There are three people involved. And he often used to say that that's what a lot of the personal columns were about. I remember one in particular. It said, I forget the names, but let's say it was D, I'll see you in the pub. Now, which pub was it? I don't know which pub it was, but it was a local pub. Let's say it was the Fox and Hounds. D, I'll see you in the Fox and Hounds, 7 o'clock Friday, signed F, for example. And he showed me this, and we thought what we'd do is we'd go along and have a look. So we went along to the Fox and Hounds on this particular Friday, and we're looking around like who is meeting whom, you know. We're looking around at 7 o'clock. Nothing really happened. One or two people wandered in and out, but we didn't see who the two culprits or who the pair were that were meeting. There were various people coming into the pub and meeting others, so it didn't really work. We didn't know what was what. But I won't bore you with this for too long. Another thing he did, he put his own little ad in the personal column, which was a terrific idea. Well, so he thought. As it turns out, it was a terrific idea. He put, his name was Dave. He put K, I remember now, because it's a long story. I'll tell you why I know it so well. He put K, see you in the pub. K, see you in the Fox and Hounds again, 7 p.m. Friday. I'll be, what did he put? I'll be in the corner, something like that. Signed it D, so it's 2K from D. He went along and he sat in the corner of the pub. There was this little corner sort of table, like a snug bit really. And he sat there. I stayed up at the bar so I could observe. And a chap came in and he went over and he said, I could hear what he was saying because I wasn't that far away. He said, are you D? I'm K, my name's Keith. So, Dave, he just said, no, sorry, what are you talking about? Anyway, the chap wandered off. So that was obviously someone else that was interested. And a little while later, just gone 7 o'clock, this girl walked in and she looked around. She came over to the bar. She bought a drink. She was looking into the corner where he was sitting. She looked at him. I thought this is something to do with it. You know, this is obviously someone that's read the advert. Anyway, she finally plucked up courage and wandered over to Dave. And she said, I'm Kay. And he said, oh, I'm Dee. And she said, yeah, I've got all this wrong, sorry. And she started to wander off. And he said, no, hang on. What's this about? I'm Dave. And she said, yeah, I'm Karen. I was expecting to meet Diane here. And he said, oh, Diane, who's that then? Anyway, she explained that she used to have a friend. The friend went off somewhere working. They lost touch. And she thought the friend was back in the area. and she'd put this in the paper because that's the pub they used to go to. So quite a coincidence that she read this little ad in the personal column. She was Karen, her friend was Diane. Anyway, she sat down and they got talking, and I won't bore you with that anymore, but do you know what happened? They ended up married, they had two kids, they got a house, everything, all because of that. So that's quite fascinating, isn't it? Anyway, I expect that's bored. You now want to look at the paper, don't you? Right, let me see what I can find in this newspaper for you. Right, this is 1965. If I can get this paper right, let's have a look at this. Here we are. Okay, this pirate business is the headline. At the very moment that Mr. Anthony Wedgwood Benn, the Postmaster General, yes, he was the Postmaster General, oh yeah, was threatening to kill off the pirate radio stations last week, a trainload of pop fans and musicians was pulling out of Euston Station, bound for Radio Caroline's first pop ball in Liverpool. Oh, so this is all about the pirate, yes, the pirate stations. I didn't realise it was Wedgwood Benn, an 18-year-old singer. Oh, look, this is funny. Hang on, the paper's screwed up on this particular bit. An 18-year-old singer who goes under the name of Twinkle framed hers in one word, nuts. Oh, that's it, when they arrived, they were asked for their reactions. Twinkle, that was her reaction, nuts. That sums up the attitude of this whole industry, blah, blah, blah. Mr. Wedgwood Benn is the least of their worries. They're far too busy scrapping with one another. Yeah, you see, there was Radio London and Radio Caroline, and they really were rivals. There's a huge article. I won't read it all because there's so much of it. But now it says here about revenue. Radio London revenue with one ship to run is reliably reported to be averaging, look at this, £60,000 a month. £60,000 a month in, what, 1965, wasn't it? Good grief, that's a lot of money. Radio 390 is the odd station out of the whole business. It doesn't play pop music. Oh, I didn't know. I remember 390. It has announcers, all gentlemen who sound like gentlemen, who dispense with mid-Atlantic accents and the disc jockey personality cult. One thing, oh, they haven't got any advertisers. Well, they won't have advertisers. Anyway, that's quite interesting. How about that, though? An 18-year-old singer who goes under the name of Twinkle. I've just had to look it up because I didn't remember her real name. It was Lynn Annette Ripley. How about that, Twinkle? Lynn Annette Ripley. She was 18 in 65. And if I'm right, she wrote that song, Terry. Do you remember that one? When she was at school. Terry, you know, the chap on the motorbike who crashes and dies and all that stuff. So, Twinkle, there we are. Lynn Annette Ripley. That's brought back memories. I quite like that song. I remember kids in our class writing songs when we were at school. None of them ever got anywhere, of course. None of the kids I went to were names like George Harrison or Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger. Dear me, Keith Richard. No, I didn't go to school with any of that lot. Don't know what my classmates ended up as. I think probably like me, nothing much. There we are. Okay, yeah, that brought back some memories. Twinkle, how about that? Let's move on. I'm back in the scrapbook again now. There's a chap here. He had a... It doesn't say where these newspaper cuttings are from. The scrapbook's full of them. They're obviously all local newspapers, but all the dates, the name of the paper and everything's cut out. Anyway, this chap, he had a caravan. He bought a field. It's a long article, so I won't go through it all. He bought a field and he had a caravan. He lived in the caravan in the middle of this field. And that was fine. That was for a couple of years, apparently. He then built... And this is the daft. He built a house, well, bungalow. He built a bungalow, it says, in the middle of this field. And the council, once he'd started building, they said, you can't do that. Let's read on here, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he carried on. He built the bungalow. Then he went for retrospective planning permission, which the council turned down. Oh, now, this gives us a rough idea of the date. It says here the bungalow cost him £10,000 to build. Well, when would that be? I've no idea, actually. So he built this bungalow and he lived in it, and the council, it all went to court, etc. And he had to take it down. They wouldn't give him the retrospective planning permission. He took the bungalow down. All that time, all that money wasted. And he went back to the caravan. And the council is saying here in this cutting, let this be a warning to people. You go for planning permission properly, okay? If you turn down, then forget it. Don't just build it and expect us to give you retrospective planning permission. That's what it says here, which is a good point. He must have been gutted. Imagine that. Oh, it says it took him 2 years to build it. He built it on his own, apparently. He had some help. He built it himself with some help. It took him 2 years. And he had to pull it down. That must have been, I don't know, he must have been devastated. But I have to say, you know, it's his own fault, really, isn't it? Oh, here we are. What's this? Barnsley, South Yorkshire, 1984. The miners' strike of 1984-85. Oh, I see. It's looking back. Started shortly after plans by the Conservative government and the National Coal Board to close 20 pits. Good grief, yeah, with the loss of 20,000 jobs. I remember that. I remember the miners' strike. Well, I suspect anyone of my age does. Going back, in 1972, the National Union of Mine Workers, the NUM, had brought down the government with a strike. In 1981, the Conservative government had backed away from confrontation, yeah, fearing the consequences. But it would appear that the lesson had been better learned by the Thatcher government. Yes. Some pits had already come out on strike plans for blah, blah, blah. Oh, Arthur Scargill, do you remember him? He was the president of the National Union of Miners. He called for a national coal mining strike. It was, as it says here, the strike was bitter and often violent, lasting a full year. Yeah, there were power cuts and all sorts going on then. It really was a dreadful time. I do remember it well. I remember the power cuts. I remember being in the pub. I think I mentioned this before on one of my episodes, being in the pub and all the lights would go out and they'd have candles and torches on the bar. I was pretty young then. I sort of found it all quite exciting. But of course, businesses, they didn't find it exciting. I think hospitals, although they had generators, power was kept on to hospitals and places like that, where they did need it. But it was a dreadful time. Yeah, it says here, the Thatcher government won a highly symbolic victory and trade union power was radically reduced. Arthur Scargill remained as NUM president until 2000, watching the industry crumble to be followed by much more of the country's traditional industrial base. Yeah, sadly, industry disappeared, didn't it? I mean, yeah, you could look back at, going back to the times of the cotton mills and all that sort of stuff, all driven by steam, everything progressed and progressed and it ended up, it's all gone. I can't find which paper it was now, but I was looking in one earlier before I started this podcast episode about the post office, your modernisation and technology all coming in. I can't find the paper now, unfortunately. And it was saying that people are going on strike and they don't want all the machinery coming in, people losing their jobs because of it. I suppose, you know, you have to progress. You've got to move with the times. If there's a sorting machine that can sort through letters like 100 times faster than perhaps, I don't know, 20 people doing it, get rid of the 20 people, have one person running the machine, you're saving money and it's faster. But of course, is that fair on the 20 people? It's okay if they're given other jobs, you know, within the same industry, the post office, for example. But this is progress. I remember someone saying to me that when trains went over to electric, the steam engines were being faded out. They finished in the 1960s. And the firemen, well, they ended up, they were offered jobs as guards or whatever. You know, they'd been up on the footplate. They were out of work, basically. They were redundant. They didn't need firemen, obviously, on electric trains. But, you know, this happens all the time. And even today, look at computers, what they've done. Loads of people aren't needed anymore. I don't know how places like banks and the Inland Revenue, anywhere like that, where they deal with vast amounts of money, I don't know how they ever got on without computers. Imagine just big ledgers. I suppose that's what they had, wasn't it? They were called ledgers. And they'd go through, if you go into a bank in the old days, and how much is in my account? They'd have to go to a paper ledger and look it up. You know, Mr. So-and-so, there we are, account number so-and-so, there it is. And if he withdrew money, that had to be, with a pen, that had to be altered. He'd withdrawn, say, £5, so his balance is now £5 less. That all had to be written in the book, in the ledger. Imagine that now. Well, it wouldn't work, would it? It just wouldn't be possible. But, you know, interesting to look back, especially going through these old papers, about progress, how things were and how they are now. Of course, as people say, well, if it all goes wrong now, you can't withdraw money from the bank. You know, it's it. Everything grinds to a halt. You haven't got any money. Just trying to find something else of interest. The papers I've got this time, they're not very interesting. There's a woman here. What's she done? Oh, this is this old silly thing about if a dog bites a man, it's not a story. If a man bites a dog, it is a story. Well, that's silly. Talking of progress, we have a similar thing on the trains now. There are strikes, aren't there, at the moment going on, I believe, because the guards, they're trying to make the guards redundant and just have a driver on the train. So people working on the railway, the drivers, the guards, they're saying, well, you can't have a train without a guard. You can't leave the driver in charge of the train because he's driving. He can't be seeing what's going on at the back of the train. So I don't know. But of course, there are strikes, blah, blah, blah. And again, this is, it's trying to move on with technology and the rest of it. Do you need a guard to wave flags and all this business? People are saying, well, yes, you do, because someone's got to check that the doors are shut properly. Someone's got to check that no one's fallen down between the train and the platform. So I don't know. Anyway, it's still going on now. That's nothing to do with old papers, is it? But I thought I'd mention it. I do apologise about this cold. Not that it's my fault, I hasten to add, but I hate trying to do a podcast episode when I've got a terrible cold like this. Let's have a look. I found another paper. 1948. Good grief, this is old. Well, it's a bit tatty, what's left of it. I'll lay this out on the desk carefully. I don't want to spoil this one. 1948. Oxfam, originally the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief. Oh, it's founded in 42. Good grief, the first Oxfam charity shop opened. How about that? I didn't realise it was that old. Joe Mitty thought that turning the clothing into cash, easier to send overseas. Joe Mitty began selling donations of clothing and anything else the public would give at 17 Broad Street in Oxford, a late Victorian building that now bears a blue plaque to commemorate that step. Oh, so this chap started selling anything, basically. The venture proved successful. There we are. Of course, now it's got thousands of shops, hasn't it, Oxfam? And I must admit, I often pop into any charity shop, not just Oxfam. I pop into charity shops if I'm out and about anywhere. Some good stuff. I bought some, not these days, but I used to buy some pretty good radios and things because, you know, that's what I'm into. And in the old days when they were allowed to sell them, I think they're allowed to sell them now, but they have to cut the mains lead off, don't they? They have to cut the wire off. But there we are, the first Oxfam charity shop. Oxfordshire, 1st of July, 1948. How about that? Yeah, there are all sorts of, well, people say there are too many now, don't they, in the high street. It's all coffee shops and charity shops. Well, whose fault's that? I suppose us, the consumer. We've gone out of town to the big supermarkets, the so-called business and retail parks. So the high streets are finished. People keep saying, oh, you know, we ought to bring back the high streets, do what we can to save the town centre. But I don't know, is it too late? Has it all changed so much with online stuff now? Is it too late? I don't know. They say what goes round comes round. You never know, the high street might come back. Anyway, I'm going to end this episode here because my cold's getting worse and I'm going to end up not being able to speak at all at this rate, which you probably might think is a good idea, just to listen to silence for a little while. I shall leave you in silence now. Don't forget the next podcast, next Sunday, is the Christmas one. What Christmas was like in the 1950s and 60s. I remember as a kid, well, I won't go into it now, but did we get millions of presents like we do now? Well, you'll see. Thanks for listening, as always. I shall see you next week with the Christmas episode. Bye-bye for now.